For decades, a quantum computer has been just around the corner. So where is it?
If you'd asked me very early on, I would have been very pessimistic.
The race to build a quantum computer.
Then I got more pessimistic.
Can anyone actually do it?
And more pessimistic.
One of the biggest tech stories on Earth. I'm Jacinta Bowler. Binge the whole series now. Search for Science Friction, Dead and Alive, on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Northern India, 1857. A rumour is spreading through the barracks of the Bengal Native Infantry. And it concerns some new rifles that the British East India Company has issued to soldiers. To load the rifle, soldiers must first bite the tip off a paper cartridge. The rumour is that those cartridges are greased with beef fat and pig fat. For the Hindu soldiers, the cow is considered sacred. And for Muslim soldiers, the pig is forbidden. To bite the cartridge is to defile yourself. When the British realise what they've done, they fix the problem, but the rumour persists and takes on a life of its own. On the 10th of May, in the town of Meerut, 85 soldiers are arrested for refusing to use the rifles. But they're not detained for long. Their comrades break them out of jail and march on Delhi. In the following weeks, the rebellion spreads across the subcontinent. This one incident combines with other resentments and indignities and quickly transforms into rage. A military mutiny becomes a broad civil uprising. It sparks what many Indians now call the First Indian War of Independence, and what the British often still referred to as the Indian Rebellion. Thousands of British, military personnel and civilians alike, are killed. The British East India Company, which has been taking over Indian territory since 1649, is suddenly fighting for its life. But the British are a formidable colonial power, and they retaliate with full force. Some Indian mutineers are tied to the mouths of cannons and blown apart. Whole villages are burnt to the ground as a form of collective punishment. Thousands are executed without trial. In just over a year, the British East India Company regains control. And yet, this spark has lit a fire that, 15 years later, will engulf the most powerful man in India. Hello, my friend. I'm Aslan Pahari, and this is Assassins, the show where we unravel the world's most shocking assassinations. Today, the murder of Viceroy Richard Bourke, the 6th Earl of Mayo. The First Indian War of Independence forced the English government to make some changes. It realised the East India Company just wasn't strong enough to maintain control of the most important country in the British Empire. The solution? Strip the company of its power and introduce direct rule by the British Crown. This is when the phrase British Raj begins to be used. Raj translates as rule or kingdom. But with Queen Victoria so far away in London, she needed a proxy who would rule from Calcutta. That person was called the Viceroy. The Viceroy would have the full powers of the British monarchy, including control of the military. It was their responsibility to stamp out rebellious movements before they could take hold. But what about the thousands of Indian soldiers who had already rebelled? The ones who became the biggest threat to colonial rule? The British would send many of those men away. As far away as possible. Government House, Calcutta, 1872. As you walk into this grand neoclassical building, there's little doubt that you're at the centre of colonial power in India. It's from here that the fourth Viceroy has been running the empire for the past 3 years. Government House is huge, with more than 150 rooms, part private residence, part headquarters of the British Empire in India. The buildings and grounds are modelled after a great country house in Derbyshire, the very essence of English power and grandeur reimagined in Calcutta. The fourth Viceroy's full name is Richard Southwell Burke, the 6th Earl of Mayo, known as Lord Mayo to his friends. Government House kind of suits him. Born in Dublin and raised on estates in County Kildare, he's the eldest son of Anglo-Irish landed gentry, the Protestant rulers of Ireland. He grew up in wealth and comfort, and has experience standing between the crown and a population that doesn't entirely want to be governed by it. The Anglo-Irish often thought of themselves as English or British, more so than Irish. Indeed, Lord Mayo spends his early political career as the Chief Secretary for the Conservative Party for Ireland, managing land disputes, Fenian uprisings, and famine relief. Not an easy gig, but it's safe to say that India is a bigger and more complex challenge for Viceroy Mayo. Lord Mayo began his job as Viceroy in 1869, arriving in Calcutta after a long journey from England by boat. That same year, an Indian prisoner named Sher Ali Afridi also makes a long sea journey. He is being sent to live in the middle of the ocean, on the Andaman Islands. At first sight, the island is stunning. Lush tropical forests filled with life, surrounded by powdery white sand and water so pristine that on some days, it's like looking at coral through a glass window. In spite of its physical beauty, this isn't a holiday retreat for stressed out colonial governors. It's a prison. With the prisons in India almost full, the Andaman Islands have become the dumping ground for men considered too dangerous to keep on the mainland. Many of the inmates are thieves and murderers, but there's a core group of political prisoners, men who rebelled against colonial rule, especially those who fought in the 1857 First Indian War of Independence. It's a brutal life for anyone locked up here, so far away from home and family. Malaria's rife. There's forced hard labour, floggings, and stingy food portions. Oh, and of course, this is yet another place the British have seized from an existing population. Indigenous tribes who keep trying to fight off colonisers from their ancestral lands. The prison was established in January 1858, when just a few hundred prisoners arrived at Port Blair in the Andaman Islands. The superintendent who greeted them was known for executing inmates for the slightest infringement. But now, there are thousands of prisoners packed into its cells. And Viceroy Mayo is en route to Port Blair for a prison visit. Sher Ali Afridi, the prisoner sent to the Andaman Islands in 1869, had fought in the First Indian War of Independence, but not on the side of the Indian rebels. Afridi was once a loyal foot soldier of the British, serving as a cavalry trooper and mounted orderly in the presidency armies. But these days, he's the prison barber, a convicted killer trusted to wield a blade on his fellow cellmates. Sher Ali Afridi is a Pashtun from the Afridi tribe of the northwestern frontier, a rugged borderland where the British and Afghans have fought each other for decades. Afridi grows up with a foot in each world, reared on tribal lands before working as a servant of the British Empire. And he's good at his work, so much so that he becomes a mounted orderly for British officers, including a man named Reynold Taylor. Taylor rewards him for his service with a horse, a pistol, and a letter of recommendation. So by all accounts, Afridi is pretty popular with his British superiors. But then, in 1869, a man named Heather, a known enemy of his family, is killed near Peshawar. Afridi pleads his innocence. He says he was on his way to a British colonel's house at the time, but he's convicted of murder anyway. His popularity amongst his British military superiors saves him from a death sentence. He's let off the hook with life in prison in the Andaman Islands. And so, in May 1869, Sher Ali Afridi arrives at Port Blair. We don't know much about his time in prison. The historical record is almost silent about him. But what we do know is that he's given more freedom than most other inmates. Like, he's able to roam around. They also let him work as a barber. And while he works, he waits. Government House, Calcutta, 1872. Lord Mayo takes his job as Viceroy pretty seriously. He travels a lot, from city to city, province to province. The man likes to inspect things personally. Lord Mayo seems to take a genuine interest in reforming the colony. Around this time in Britain, a prison reform movement is also growing. Hard labour is still the norm, but critics say prisons should correct as well as punish. It should also teach them the value of work. In the Andaman Islands, convicts are taught to clear jungle and build roads. Viceroy Mayo is sympathetic to these fashionable ideas about prison reform and wants to see the theory in practice. So, he decides to make a personal visit to the Andaman Islands prison. It'll be his first trip to the archipelago. But this is an anxious time. The acting Chief Justice of Calcutta was recently stabbed to death in broad daylight. The empire is restless, but at least the Andaman Islands are remote and the prison is well secured. It's a low-risk trip. News spreads on the island that someone powerful is coming to visit. And so, preparations are made. In January 1872, Viceroy Mayo and his wife set sail for the Andaman Islands. Their ship reaches Port Blair on the 8th of February. Upon arrival, Lord Mayo meets with administrators and tours the islands. Late in the afternoon, with some time to spare, he makes a spontaneous decision. He's heard that the summit of Mount Harriet, across the harbour, might be a good spot for a new sanitarium. His armed escort follows him to check out the location. It's past sunset when they return, and the group walk towards the pier. There, Sher Ali Afridi is waiting behind a rock. Afridi has been meticulously preparing for this day. Fellow prisoners recall him giving away possessions in the lead-up to the attack. Afridi spends every last rupee he has. He even farewelled his fellow prisoners. So now, as Lord Mayo reaches the pier, his security chief momentarily steps aside to speak to a group of prison officers. And for a moment, his attention is not on the Viceroy. Lord Mayo is exposed. Afridi lunges from the shadows. He drives an iron kitchen knife into Mayo's back, pulls it out and stabs him again. Mayo staggers forward and pitches over the edge of the pier into the shallow water below. His secretary Byrne rushes to him. "They've hit me, Byrne," says the Viceroy. He feels his shoulder. "I don't think I'm much hurt." Those are his last words. Lord Mayo, Viceroy of India, is dead within minutes. Sher Ali Afridi makes no attempt to flee. He's immediately taken into custody. The following morning, Afridi's interrogation begins. During his interrogation, Afridi says he acted by order of God. In the official British report, the attack is described as a jihad. Afridi even claims it was his brother who assassinated that judge in Calcutta just a few months earlier. The investigators doubt this, but the connection to wider anti-colonial movements is something they take very seriously. Any sort of political organising could end in another rebellion. The British response is swift. Afridi is executed within weeks. Letters and communications across the colony are seized and searched. Convict networks are examined for signs of conspiracy. But nothing is discovered. So, the official conclusion is that Sher Ali Afridi acted alone. Whatever his motive, the most powerful man in India was assassinated by a man no one saw coming. Assassins is hosted by me, Aslan Pahari. Hannah Jose is the producer. Sound design by Emrys Cronin. Supervising producer is Kyla Slavin. Executive producers are Joel Werner, Eric George, and Jessica Ratburn. As well as listening to Assassins, you can watch full episodes of the show on YouTube and Spotify. Those videos are shot and edited by Tejas Bhatt and Dylan Bien. If there's an assassination you'd like us to cover on the show, please email us, assassins@abc.net.au. I hope to hear from you soon, my friend.